I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kayla Itzinas.
I'm Kayla Itzinas, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Smashbox TV Podcast 500.
500, Terry Miller, the 50.
I was wondering earlier, what's longer, the Daytona 500 or a typical podcast of ours?
I mean, I bet you there are some podcasts of ours that would have outlasted a Daytona 500. I mean, it all depends on the weather down there.
Down there where it's racing. A Google search told me 3 to 3.5 hours is like average or somewhere around that neighborhood.
Sure. So usually, I mean, I guess it depends. Are you counting the entire show? Because I know this is episode 500, but we also have put out 2 podcasts a week, which we tend to record together. I mean, one could arguably say this is almost episode 1000 if we maybe sat and counted those other ones.
Yeah, if you really thought about it. Well, but we'll dig into some of the numbers and some of the details. I've got some very basic details and some things to maybe reminisce on, and we'll do that a little later in the show. Welcome in, everyone. This is podcast 500. Maybe the quiz later will consist of this. If you guys have any idea what 500 looks like, that would tell you, well, I'll give you the starting date. November 11th.
11-11.
11-11.
You kept trying to kiss me. It was weird.
2014, just shy of 9.5 years ago, which is kind of silly in its own sense. Just the fact that we've been doing this, good, bad, or indifferent, love us or hate us. I'm not going for any of that. I'm just saying 9.5 years, and here we are. Also, maybe equally as important, in just 3 days, we will be a full 10 years of our first ever live broadcast.
That's true, Terry.
That was
Sylmar.
April 5th of 2014, earlier that year, over at the Sylmar Open. And again, we'll talk about more of those details and some of that stuff later and give credit where it's all due. But just to put that all in perspective for just a moment, 2014 was the year. November 11th was the first ever podcast, which was kind of funny. Today I clicked on it and I watched the first 2 minutes of it.
Rough, huh?
No, actually, let's put it this way. We've started other ones way worse. There's no doubt about that. So the fact that our first one was far from our worst says something. Okay. It did only go a little more than an hour that particular night.
We ran out of batteries.
Yeah. So it was.
So one could arguably say that our company is just about 10 years old.
Yeah.
I know we had some plans for a while previous to the first broadcast. Clearly we didn't just pick it up and go one weekend, regardless of how it may look. You don't count the conception in the birthday. It's the day it's born.
That's true. So that's true. Well, nonetheless, again, a little later, we'll talk about all of that. But when we had our very first podcast on November 11th of 2014, that was pre Disc Golf Pro Tour. We're older. Our podcast is older than the Disc Golf Pro Tour, which does say a little bit about a moment in time way back in that day. And that's when the National Tour was the main professional tour, so to speak. And even that, as great as those events were still only, I'll say, without trying to sound diminishing of them in any way, because they were the best that we had at the time, they were still only a fraction of what we have now in terms of the overall output to the pay structures and to what it means for a professional disc golfer. I don't think anyone should take any offense to me saying exactly that. I mean, that's when purses, we were excited about a $2,000 and $3,000 first place purse.
Yeah, $2,500
was great. Or $3,000 or $4,000, maybe $5,000. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, you're taking top 4 or 5 spots and you're still getting that kind of money. So very impressive.
Yeah, these days MPO, it's almost a standard that the MPO winner gets $10,000.
Yeah, we've come a long way. And one of the people that won a Tournament Director of the Year award, and he then also wrote up a few other awards that he handed to himself because he's that impressive. Our very first guest of the Smashbox TV podcast nearly 10 years ago is our guest tonight, Steve Dodge.
Steve. Hello there, Terry. Hello there, Johnny. Hi, I think we should change. There's a format around where I interview you guys because it's your 500th.
If you got questions, we got answers.
Yeah, we may have to defer to some of our lawyers, but we probably have answers.
You got lawyers?
Yeah, they're the same ones as Steve, and that's what's part of the problem.
Oh, man.
That's the problem. I actually assumed you would say no to that. I don't have any planned questions.
That's fine. Nor do we.
Welcome. You can be a co-host. Way to go.
Yeah. We'll just call you co-host then tonight.
But I do want to say thank you guys very much. I remember the very first podcast that you guys did with me on it. And I remember sitting on the couch and I was literally holding the phone and Johnny was like, can you stabilize that camera? And I was like, my hands kind of shaking a little bit. Yeah. Anyway, and now I have a professional ring light that makes my glasses look funny and everything's great.
Well, it's the same shape as your glasses. So we're good.
It is.
We're good there.
Yeah. But congratulations to you guys. If I haven't said it often enough, I'll be happy to say it again. Without Terry, without Johnny, the Pro Tour would flat out not exist. There is no other way to say it. You guys are important fixtures in disc golf, and I thank you for everything that you've done. And I'm not going to go too much further to get emotional this quickly into an interview.
Well, we certainly appreciate it. It's never been a secret that when we got started with doing our version of live disc golf, there were a lot of uncertainties out there, and very few entities and companies were all in on live disc golf. Some of them being the Rico brothers over at Legacy, who wanted to support us from day one. Jeremy Rusko and Dynamic Disc wanted to support us from day one. And then you were right there in that line along with them that wanted to support the growth of live disc golf from day one. And those are a few that jump out immediately. And if it weren't for you and then eventually the Pro Tour saying, hey, we want live disc golf and an established amount of events, you know, on some form of actual committed schedule, I'm not sure that we would have kept pushing the way we did with it. So it's crazy how it's all worked out that way. And there were some times with the Pro Tour that we all shared, and I think it made all of us better people, and hopefully it made disc golf better as well.
So I was remembering one of those times, and I'm going to guess that it was 2018, but I don't know for sure. And I'm going to have Terry Miller tell a story. 2018, San Francisco, we We were planning on doing the broadcast booth from the library.
Yeah.
And I think that it just so happened that it was some holiday. I don't know what holiday it was. But the library was closed on Sunday, and we got there, and shocker, I hadn't called the library to say, hey, are you open all 4 days? I called them to say, hey, do you have a room we can utilize? And they said, yes, but I didn't say, can we utilize it on these days? Do you remember that conversation? I remember you, me, Trent, maybe somebody else was there. Does that ring a bell to you, Terry?
Honestly, if I recall, it may have been like the middle day that we couldn't use the library, and/or because they just closed too early.
Oh, that's what it was.
Closed
on the final day.
Yeah, they closed, and we couldn't be there the entire time. And so then I think we had a conversation about if we wanted to be there at all for that day, or how the timing was going to work out, and then trying to maneuver. Now, mind you, that was also in the days of us going from the course, getting to the location sometimes, setting up the camera, the mics, the lights, the computers, everything, and then being live and on camera 28 minutes later, and then having to break it down some nights, most nights, just to go back and do it again the next day. And I think we had to go to some alternative location, like the middle day or one of the 3 days.
Panera didn't appreciate that, probably.
Yeah, exactly.
Well,
yeah,
with what you just said, I remembered the solution and how we saw, because on Sunday, like the library closed at 4 o'clock or something, and the tournament wasn't going to end till 5. And we figured out the timing, and it was you and Dixon Jowers in the booth. Mm. And I believe what happened was we had Dixon, like you just sort of dropped off the air. And then Dixon did all of the commentary while you drove to the course, hooked up to one of the cameras. And then you said, hey, everybody, we're live here on course. And then instantly Dixon went away and he drove to the course, and Seth Fenley and I stayed behind and broke everything down while the librarians were going, we're supposed to be on vacation.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. That's exactly how it went down. And I remember at one point we had like Madison and Holly Finley or somebody in the booth, because they were commentating on the FPO, because I was editing FPO footage every three holes. They would play three holes. And then we'd get the cards, and I'd edit those together to get to Johnny V. And then Johnny V would splice that into the current MPO footage that was being played, or they would commentate on it beforehand. Yeah.
In between holes, or while they're walking down the fairway or something. It was because we only covered one card max, maybe two, probably one.
Yeah. Those were all part of the days of seeking the internet, which was funny how much we still, from a post-production standpoint and even live, we still are seeking out good internet spots. But those were some of the trials and tribulations that we went through on a weekend by weekend basis. Meanwhile, being in San Francisco, which is an incredibly expensive city to visit when you're not used to it, and you know, just bringing the tour there, being at Glen Eagles and everything else that, you know, Sean Jack and Sean Mercy and the whole crew were doing. It was,
see, the pro tour now thinks they're all fancy because they have this thing called the walk and talk.
Oh,
we've been doing that since like 2014
when we had to.
That was the only microphone we had.
I have one of my favorite pictures is Terry Miller hooked up to my brother on a tree on hole 9, and my brother's on the deer stand filming, and Terry's on the ladder underneath him commentating because he can only be 10 feet away or whatever, however long that cable was.
Before the days of drones and the countless times I had told people we're a long way away from live drone footage. and seeing drones during the broadcast and everything else. I thought we were a full 10 years away at the time, and it certainly happened well within a 10-year time span. Drones and internet and things have come a long way, but including drone batteries and transmission and everything else. But it's been a wild road in every regard.
So all of the people listening, you all cannot thank Terry and Johnny enough for being fantastic pioneers who are willing to jump on the bleeding edge and ride it so far for however long it's been, 14, 16 years. So congrats to you guys and to your listeners for sticking it out, because it wasn't always easy.
Either that or we were just stupid.
Both. It takes a long time for us to learn.
Yeah.
Steve, we had you on for episode one. I was quickly perusing through a few of the archives just for a few minutes today. I think we had you on, or at least you chimed in with a clip for episode 100. I think we had you on for episode 200. I'm positive we did. Episode 300, we also caught up with you. I think we talked to UDisc and then Bobby Brown maybe that night as well. I assume we had you on for 400. I don't remember. But you're our go-to. Somehow you're our guiding light in our North Star. I don't know what you want to call it, but here we are.
Jess is rolling her eyes right now.
Yeah, I can imagine. I know. She's like, how is this man fooling all of us? But here we are, almost a full 10 years later. And what to you, aside from some of those early Disc Golf Pro Tour memories, what to you, you know, jumps out in the last 10 years? And I know that's kind of a big question, but what jumps out at you in disc golf in the last 10 years?
I would say that the creation of the Disc Golf Pro Tour, the creation of the Disc Golf World Tour, somebody tried the American Tour or something like that, where you had some of the players actually do commentary while they're playing. Maybe the thing that jumps out is all of the creativity that our passion brings to this sport. Maybe that's the thing that jumps out. Everybody watching, everybody playing, it's still a niche sport. If you're playing disc golf, you are on the cutting edge, and you want your friends to know how great this sport is. I think if you play soccer, you don't have any desire to tell your buddies, "Hey, come play soccer with me." Mm. That sport's already there. Disc golf is not there. It's not as far as it's going to get. And I think the last 10 years has just been a lot of passionate people being very creative and coming up with a lot of very fun things. I guess that's it.
Well, and kind of along with the growth, I think about just a few of the people we've had on the show. I think about a Macbeth contract that was certainly game changing. Yep. And then that led to conversations about a Simon Lazat contract, obviously much more recently. Paige Pierce and her moves, and Kona Montgomery and the moves, and Kristen, and like the contracts and the conversations from a player and from a professional tour standpoint. And I'll even say it, the surge that Discraft has put forward comes to mind also in the last 10 years. And that maybe goes hand in hand with some of these contracts that I'm just talking about. It's been wild. And then the creativity and ingenuity that we've seen from, like you said, some of these tournaments. I was at the second ever, maybe even the first ever Ledgestone finale, and to see where that started to where it is now. I mean, it's, you just would have no idea. It's insane. So,
Nate was well ahead of his time, and everybody let him know it back in the day. And now he's pretty much in his time, and we're all happy that he's doing what he's doing. And it doesn't surprise me, Terry, that your answer of what have we seen in the last 10 years is much better than my answer, because I'm a very pro-centric person. I love all the people that are putting in the efforts to grow the grassroots. But I feel like when you're introduced to a sport, if there's not someone you can look up to at a pro level, that the sport's not gonna, it's going to have a harder time sticking with you. And so I'm very myopic. I focus on the top of the game because I think that's a side of the game that was missing before. And definitely wasn't getting the love I think it needed. And the grassroots is where a lot of the innovation actually comes from. And that's where the actual growth happens. And then I think the Pro Tour just helps the traction of the grassroots. And you, in your position, have had your thumb on, not the thumb on the scale, your eye on the ball. I don't know exactly what, but finger you've been pulse. Aware of finger on the pulse. He's the finger on the ball. You've had everything. That's probably not the right analogy.
With you, it is.
But it was hearing you answer. I was like, oh yeah, all those things too. So much better answer. That's all I wanted to say.
Well, I always think of you, Steve, as kind of, I think of you as cutting edge. I think of you as always a big thinker, trying new and different things. I mean, we've seen it forever. A lot of people seem to think it starts with the Disc Golf Pro Tour, but it goes back even further than that. But on top of that, we've seen your disc golf board game, Birdie. We've seen, you know, Spirit of the Game. We saw the big contract you signed with MVP for Maple Hill. What do you see? Do you have other visions? Do you have other big visions for the sport for the next 10 years that do or don't involve you?
I have a lot of, it's funny. I don't know if you guys are aware. I just started a new podcast and one of my favorite things to do on Friday, I give my thoughts for the weekend. I pull a little Andy Rooney and I just say, here's what I think we should all be thinking about. And some of the things that I've talked about are, last week was trans women. The week before was smaller baskets. I can't even remember what was the week before, but the weeks before, but every weekend I try to come up with something and there's never a problem coming up with a new idea, or not a new idea, but maybe a new twist on an old idea. I think there's lots to do still in disc golf, and I'm excited to see and help as much of it as I can.
Yeah, and also one of the things that we've seen, and not that you originated the idea necessarily, but the having volunteers pay for their volunteering spot. And we saw Tom Schott, and again, we see PGA events do that. But you're not afraid, I think, to stick your neck out there and or roll those dice. And if it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't. Thinking about some of your spectator passes and the way that you guys have done a number of things. You're always just kind of taking that chance, a calculated one, but you're willing to take that risk. Maybe this is a funny question to ask you, and it really is just coming to mind now. Do you think we will see or need or see a competitor to the Disc Golf Pro Tour? Will or can? Or should someone, and this is funny because we all kind of work for them. So I understand what I'm asking. Yeah. And you started it, but some are already saying, well, I don't like what they've overtaken. They may have built it, which they immediately forget. They built it and have created these opportunities. But then sometimes the follow up to that already is, yeah, but I don't like the control. I don't like everything that goes along with it. So that begs the question, and will that be you? Because you seem like the crazy the crazy guy after starting the Pro Tour and being where we are. You seem like you might be the guy that would create the alternative.
I haven't always been that we should row in the same direction, I'm of the opinion now. Well, let me start by saying the Pro Tour is our eighth season. And by our, I don't mean like yours and mine. I mean, like collectively in disc golf, this is our eighth disc golf pro tour season. So we've completed seven. And this is our ninth.
Yeah. This is the ninth already.
This is the ninth. We've completed eight. That's what it is. We've completed eight seasons. Eight. I mean, the New York Jets had won the Super Bowl just 5 years ago in NFL parlance. Right. I mean, we're right at the very beginning of this. Will there ever be a competitor to the Disc Golf Pro Tour? Probably. Saudi Arabia probably has some money to spend. Too soon?
Anyone can come along, and obviously the Pro Tour is very established, and they want to continue to be, along with the PDGA, right, wants to continue to be the official tour for our pros. And I'm not denying any of that, but at a certain point, competition, just like the Pro Tour, eventually rose to the competition of competing and
the national
absorbing
tour.
Then the national tour. You have to assume somewhere down the line, somebody's got to be thinking about this, right?
I wouldn't be thinking about it yet. In my opinion, the Pro Tour is too small for someone with deep pockets who has a vision of making their pockets deeper. The Pro Tour and disc golf are both too small for that, in my opinion, for that to be a reality. The total income of the Pro Tour especially when you factor in the losses of the Pro Tour, that doesn't give a lot of incentive to somebody who would come in as a business to say, I think there's a better way to do this. Someone as a passion project who says, hey, I really think that we shouldn't have any men playing them, so I'm going to start a new Pro Tour that's just 39 and under. Sure. Maybe as a passion play, but realistically that would be very difficult. And I don't see any real benefit to that. I feel like all of our oars at this point should be rowing towards simply getting as much growth as possible. Let's move forward 30 years. And, the Vince McMahon of the day says, hey, I need to start a new DGPT that's going to compete with the DGPT. The reason he's doing it is because he sees money in it. I should say they. The reason that person is doing that is because they see money in it. But there's that money's not there yet. So we're a ways off from that. And I think our goal should be to get to the point where the guy in the future says, hey, I want to look into that sport because I see an opportunity there. Once that happens, we can all sit back and go, okay, we succeeded. There's different problems that happen. It's always really, it's interesting to me. And I'll just, when the Pro Tour, after 2016, we started 2017, and there were all sorts of problems. But the only reason those problems existed was because the Pro Tour existed. Like, if we had failed, then I wouldn't have had those problems. I would have gone back into working for Vibram. It would have all been good. But we succeeded, and so we had new problems that we had to overcome. Same thing in 18, same thing in 19. That's just, but in 20, I didn't have any more problems with the Pro Tour because I'd already failed dramatically enough. But it's really hard sometimes in the moment to recognize the only reason I have these problems is because I've succeeded in getting here. And if you fail, you don't have those problems anymore. The whole thing just went away. So problems are a sign of success.
So, I guess to follow on top of all that, where do you see media continue? Because media was so crucial to you and is such an integral part of the overall tour, obviously.
And it's changed so much.
And it's changed so much from where we, you know, where we started. Like we said, two or three people did the entire live broadcast, and you're looking at two of the three right now. So it's
How is
changed.
D-Rio
so
doing?
G to the O's doing good and still is working still in live disc golf. Yeah.
Oh my God, that is so exciting. Tell Gary I said hi. Is he listening?
No. He doesn't watch us. He's too big for us now.
He's in bed now probably. he's got a young child and he's always still been an early sleeper, but I'm sure he'll get this tomorrow or the next day.
Okay. So, good. With that,
I miss and love you, Gary.
Where do you see what's next in disc golf media through your glasses? Spectacles.
Through my Coke bottles. Well, let me just first say I'm really excited that. I don't need to go there. Okay, where are we going forward? I think the next step would be for CBS is going to be airing some. I don't know what's 4 or 5 episodes from this season, mm-hmm. and I think they did 2 or 3 last season, and then 4 and 5 is more. And then that contract continues. And then CBS says, hey, we want to cover the last round of the Tour Championship live. And that's the next step. The progression, disc golf is going to continue to grow. We're going to have the PDGA is going to have two flat years. And then in 27 or 28 should pick up back again around the 10 to 15% growth. But disc golf as a whole is, in fact, growing. The PDGA's numbers are it's hard to see it in there, but disc golf is continuing to grow. CBS is going to see increased numbers of viewers, and we will have live broadcasts. I would expect in 10 years, you will be able to watch Saturday, Sunday of the MVP Open by OTB live on a network. And that network could be Netflix and it could be CBS. I don't want to limit what the network means. But I believe you'll be able to see it on a very, very broadly distributed network.
Yeah. I think about what other sports have for media that disc golf doesn't have. I mean, every sport has podcasts these days. Every sport has some sort of summary video you can find on YouTube or their local event. But that's the one thing we don't have yet is live coverage on a major. Well, and I'm going to put that in quotes of some sort, a major platform, a publicly accessible or even by subscription model, large scale platform, a Netflix, Amazon. Peacock, Amazon,
And don't leave out CBS, don't leave out ABC.
Yep.
Those guys, the old school networks are still very viable and have very big audiences and platforms.
Exactly. Yeah.
I would guess that's going to be about a decade. And I don't think there's really any doubt about it. And we're excited about having $100,000 payout at our pro tour events, and rightly so, relative to where we used to be. That's great. But in 10 years, if it's not a million, we're doing a very bad job.
Really? I think a million in 10 years.
Yeah.
Okay. I know with the pace that we've been growing the last 3 years with purses has been astounding. But 10 years, yeah.
Well, that's my follow up to, I guess, that, tying those both together is I know you're not necessarily looking at the Pro Tour's books per se, but we see these payouts. Is it sustainable? Is it practical? And if so, what steps are needed for us to keep going in that direction in terms of these payouts? Because we look at these numbers. I mean, we're literally handing out $12,000 to first place. $12,000 used to be like a third of the entire event budget for some tournaments, for some larger scale mm-hmm. tournament. We're handing that to a winner of one division. I mean, it's just crazy right. The numbers we've seen. How does that sustainability? Because I love seeing these big payouts for things like the World Championships, but yeah, can we maintain that?
That's going to be up to the sponsors. And if we give our sponsors, our partners, return on investment, we give them brand credibility. We give them thousands of rabid fans of their products. Yeah, we're going to keep growing those purses and it will be sustainable. If we do not buy Barbasol shaving cream, no, it is not sustainable. That, and that's just an example of a sponsor.
Put it on your face.
Yeah. So, but I would turn that question around, Terry, and I would say, if we didn't give the winners $12,000, who's pocketing that money? The partners are giving money. The spectators are giving money. There's money coming into the events. That money needs to be shared, in my opinion, between the Pro Tour, the event, and the players. The players need to get their cut. The events need to get their cut. In probably 50% of my job now is the MVP Open. If the MVP Open is a flop, I literally failed at my job. If the Vibram Open was a flop in 2009, sorry, I didn't have time to run it as well as I wanted to. But now, I think we're to the point where this is a significant part of my job. And by my job, I mean, like, the way that I bring money and pay for my house is through the MVP Open. So I put a lot of effort into it. I have a lot of great staff, and I have a lot of staff that pay to come to volunteer for the event, and we give them much more than they pay for in value. But I think the events need to get paid. The Pro Tour needs to get paid, and the players need to get paid. And the players getting $12,000 to win, that's just their share of the bucket.
It has been, like I said, astonishing to see where these have gone. I have that's been my only hesitation is how sustainable is it? And thinking that when you see the money come in, it's like you're spending money to make money. I guess I understand that, because we're saying, hey, if we're going to give away 40 grand for first place of the tour championship to the FPO winner and the MPO winner, that pressure and that need to have at least that much for the subsequent year, for the following year. But I also, I think I understand the philosophy is, if we're giving away that much money this year, that makes us look that much more legitimate to potential sponsors. Is that kind of the premise there? Like, hey, we gave away $300,000 last year. We're a very legitimate organization and event. Therefore, you should invest in us in the future. I mean, do you understand?
I understand what you're saying, and I'm going to disagree with your premise.
Okay.
I I don't know the tour championships books. I think it is valid for the Pro Tour to invest in the tour championship and potentially put more money in than they're getting from partners. I don't know if that's the case, but I think that's a valid business model, because the tour championship needs to be an elite event. It needs to be a major, maybe with a lowercase m. People need to say, wow, they won the tour championship and the USDGC, and have them be at least kind of comparable. And one way to do that is money. So regarding the tour championship, I can totally understand if they're doing that. I don't know the answer, but I can understand that. Regarding the MVP Open, I think last year we paid out $12,500 to the winner and maybe $10,000 to the woman winner. And that was 100% sustainable. We get that money from partners. We get that money from ticket sales. We get that money from concessions and from parking. There's money coming in. We're building infrastructure that we can think of that is going to make the most sense. We have a lot of additions this year and every year. But I think it's important that the players get their fair cut. Are you going to come to Maple Hill, Terry, and say, those bleachers, are those sustainable? The Jumbotrons, we got two this year. Are those sustainable? Of course they are. They're the reason that the spectator, if you only have 10 spectators, you don't need Jumbotrons. But now we're getting to the point where you have a lot of spectators and they're paying for those Jumbotrons. They're making that experience. Well, I'm paying for them, but they're, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And it all works so that we all just keep growing. So I think it's critical that the players get their cut.
Jumbotrons, I prefer TVs and trees right above hole 18.
Yeah, that's exactly where you're about.
Well, where there's always the threat of a disc catching that that TV. You never know.
So for anybody that comes to Maple Hill, when you play hole 18, that TV stand is still, the TV mount is still on that tree. So you can see what Johnny's talking about. We used to do that.
And I'm not trying to be, you know, nitpicky or anything of that nature or be a pessimist maybe. But this does kind of bring me to the conversation that I had maybe a year or so ago with Macbeth in talking about pricing. And it does lead right into what you're saying. Yes, the spectators are paying for that. How do we balance what that magic price is? And you're, I feel like, probably on the high end of a lot of pricing. How do we balance that pricing structure to where it's affordable and obtainable for people to go and have that experience without losing a little bit of our like friendly grassroots hippie, like, kind of chill, relaxed vibe, yep. So that going to a tournament shouldn't cost you and your family $2,200 to be there. Like, how do you balance that pricing structure?
The first thing I'll say is that if you and your wife would like to come to Maple Hill and spend $2,200, we do have a ticket for you.
Yeah, I bet.
We actually have the Insider Pass, which is $1,000. And you would want the good parking spot, which is $250. So that's $2,250. It's just a little above your budget. I think it's worthwhile.
Okay.
And I actually mean that. It is the people that did it last year, most of them have reached out and said, how do we do it again this year? And we didn't raise the price, but we did add some more things to it. So, but anyway, and then on the other end, to your point about keeping it accessible, on Thursday, if you want to come watch on Thursday, tickets are $10. They get more expensive as the week goes on. But Thursday is also the day that we have the player meet and greet. So if you have kids, pull them out of school on Thursday and come watch and let them meet some of their favorite players who they watch on television. They'll get all the signatures. The crowds are the smallest. You're paying the least and you're getting the most interaction with the players. It's exactly what you're talking about. Actually, we have one other bonus. We're changing the course up. We're changing holes. Holes 1, 9, 11, and 16. We have alternate pins. For example, hole 1, the alternate pin is the short basket just over the pond. So for the men, they'll be playing from the gold tee to the basket just over the pond. A very exciting shot.
I love that.
I love it too. I'm excited about all of the changes, and we can go through them if we want. But you can only see those changes in person on Thursday, Friday. We want to encourage people. You don't have to spend $60 to come and get the blue pass on Sunday and follow them around the course. You can come on Thursday, you can come on Friday and spend a lot less money and see all these players. And you can even see them play a version of Maple Hill that nobody else will have ever seen.
Okay. I guess the whole point was when you're talking and you answer it in the sense that your opening day on Thursday is much more budget friendly for people to come out. I just, my example was when Paul and I were going back and forth about just overall pricing of events and various things. One of his example, I said something like, I don't want a visit to a disc golf event to rival the cost of going to Disney World for a day. And he, in a sense, disagreed with that. And then I just, I guess I was thinking about the roots of like where disc golf was, where it's going. And I personally, maybe because I have this weird bias about us not being one of the big four, I don't want it to cost the same to go even to a pro tour event as it costs for me to go to a game at Lambeau Field to watch the Packers.
I disagree. Like
the Packers, who are on a $100 million budget for the year, whatever it is, compared to where disc golf is at and the amenities and the experience that's provided. You could argue in some ways the experience is better. I get all of that, but I don't want to get to a point where not that's expensive to get there. And then you're paying $13 for a freaking beer and you're paying $12 for some popcorn. Like, I don't think that legitimizes us as a sport. And maybe just call me a cheap ass, and that's fine too. Don't think that legitimizes us because we're paying big ticket dollars and for items just like you would at any other sporting event.
I think the right,
because I feel like those also suck that you have to pay that.
I can understand that, but it's funny because I think we've probably switched brains here, Terry. There's a cold capitalist in me that.
Charge them whatever you want as long as they pay for it.
Until they stop. But I think there should be levels as far as what's available. There are people, like Steve said, who want to pay the $1,000 for that special, for that special, you know, back rub that Steve gives you at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I mean, that's worth $1,000. Yeah. You know, for $1,500, he'll wear his Star Trek outfit when he does it. It's great.
but it checks off a few
check boxes for some of us. But I think those options should be there. Should your base level, you know, I don't necessarily think you have the quote unquote right to go to the Sunday final day for $22. I think that's making sure we have our options available for us for all of your budgets, I think is the right move at what we're doing, because that isn't the case with baseball always. I mean, there are some, you know, I and forgive me if I'm wrong there, but I think getting into Yankee Stadium, I doubt I'm getting into Yankee Stadium for $10 at almost any ticket. Now, there are some Brewer games I can get in for $10 on certain days and certain events and things like that. So I don't know.
Terry, would you prefer to go to a disc golf pro tour event or a national tour event?
Which is funny. That's almost unfair compared to
a national tour event, because they're very rare.
Yeah, national tour event, because there was only like 100 other people there, and there were no cameramen getting in my way, and I could just walk up with a camera and film whatever I wanted, because I did.
Right.
There were a lot of benefits to that, including.
Okay. Wait. Yeah. What's the biggest benefit? You said it already. There's only 100 people there.
Yeah.
Great. Great. And how much did the players get?
Very few dollars.
$2,500 was a good win.
And how many of those players, when they were 12, said, I want to be a professional disc golfer. I want to travel around the country and make $8, $12. Like, I hope you understand the reason that Gannon Burr exists, the reason that Kyle Klein exists, the reason that Ellie Middling exists is because the Pro Tour is saying you can make a living doing this. We want to see the best athletes in the world that love our sport play our sport. That's who I want to watch. It's always made me sad that, is it Scott Withers? Is that somebody?
Yeah, the Northwest, yeah.
Scott Withers, an amazing talent in disc golf. But he's got a life that the money isn't worth it for him. Mm-hmm. And it maybe is starting to be, but I'm sad that Scott Withers never really put its best foot forward and said, hey, we actually can make you a good amount of money. You can have a nice living and you can still have your family. we didn't even give him the opportunity. And he's a very good disc golfer. Every time I see him, I love watching him. But I didn't get the opportunity because we only had 100 people watching. So that's, I totally get your grassroots heartstrings, Terry. But realistically, if that's the way you feel, in 2015, when I say, hey, Terry, can you do Smashbox for the Pro Tour? You should have said no.
Way to go, Terry.
I think we did accept grassroots payment for many years, if you recall.
Of course.
And that's not to say I don't want disc golf to grow, and I don't. It's not that I don't appreciate the Pro Tour. I just don't want to see, at the same time, I don't want to see us to get so big that it becomes like this major hurdle. I don't like the idea of saying, yeah, it's going to cost some, you're going to have to take out a small loan for a family of four to go, for a husband and a wife and two kids to go watch disc golf at a professional level. That rubs me wrong.
You're missing it, Terry. You can still go watch the national tour. It's called the A tiers in your area.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The quality of players is just as good as it was at the national tour. The number of people there is the same. It's free. All the Pro Tour does is give you another option.
Yeah. So what you're essentially saying, if to use an analogy, is you don't have to go to the Yankee game or to the Brewer game or the Cub game. You could go to the minor league or the AAA game and you could go watch that and it will be at a fraction of the cost.
And they've got top players there, people who will be in the major leagues in a year else. Or, okay. I mean, the options out there.
I'm from Pittsburgh. I've watched minor league baseball my whole life.
What's that?
He said he's from Pittsburgh. He's watched minor league baseball his whole life. Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, let's get into, since you've already alluded to a few of them, let's get into a couple of the things that you will be overseeing and implementing at this year's MVP Open.
Presented by OTB.
Did you change the name this year? Let's start there. Have you changed the name?
Yes, of course.
Okay. Of course. What's the new name this year for your tournament?
MVP Open by OTB.
See who gets a CTP. And who's down with OPP. Okay, great. I'm glad we can.
All right. The word, just saying MVP Open presented by OTB, was too long, and everybody wants to drop the presented by. So MVP Open by OTB. It's basically the same length as Jonesboro Open. But I've got my sponsors in there. So yeah. MVP Open by OTB.
I like it, actually.
Okay. So we've got that nailed down. Talk about a few of the implemented changes or proposed and who do you have to, do you run these by? At this point, what are you running by the Pro Tour committee, staff, whatever? Like, work us through that relationship first as to when you say, hey, guys, I've got another bright idea. And when they're done rolling their eyes, then what conversation is had?
Wait, can Johnny put up the picture that I emailed you guys?
I certainly
No, not that one, Johnny. No, don't put up that one. We don't want to end it at 500. All right. So what are we looking at here, Steve?
It's a barn raising party.
On hole one, we are building a triple mando as you go into the island green. One thing that we are seeing on disc golf courses, the USDGC started this. Some European events are doing it. Sometimes the Pro Tour does it with their trusses. I have a concern. Well, I'll just say this. So this is our triple mando going into hole one, and people will be able to stand to the left and the right of that in the OB areas. And then disc golfers will throw their shots it's actually a faux covered bridge. I don't know what to call it exactly, but through the faux covered bridge onto the green. And what we're going to do is we're opening up those areas to the side for spectators. And we didn't used to be able to have spectators there. But when you're standing there, you're able to see all the way up to the bleachers, all the way up to the tee, and you'll be able to see the shots as they fly over the pond, down onto the road, and then you'll be able to obviously watch the second shots and the putts. So this is going to be one way that we increase the number of spectators on the site. Additionally, for the top players, hole one was actually becoming a little easy to birdie because you get, if you get within 100 feet of that wall, which their drives do, the woods are now getting quite thin and you can just pop over the OB sections and get into there. So for the top players who, I hate to say it to everybody else, that's who I'm worried about because that's who I want to watch play. This is going to make hole one just a little more dicey. One more thing to think about when you're with your drive. It's not just pure distance anymore. If you fail, if you fade off right or you fade off left, then you've got a really tough second shot, or now you have a really tough second shot. The other thing that we're doing with this triple Mando is, let me first say, I love Keith Murray. I love Dan Ginnelly. I love what those guys have done. I wish the Memorial was still on the Pro Tour. I wish that they had advanced and kept pushing and stayed on the Pro Tour, because I think what they've done is amazing. However, on hole one, their triple Mando is posts, little metal posts with basically with a string with those little pennant flags on it. And I never liked the look of that. And I have a concern that people want to put more Mandos onto the course, but they're not thinking through the aesthetics. And so I wanted to build a triple Mando that had valid aesthetics. So for me, we're up in New England. I wanted it to look like a covered bridge. Like the front of it should look like a covered bridge. Obviously, it doesn't have the depth of a covered bridge, but it has a really nice roof on it. It has really nice barn board siding. We painted it red. It's the goal here is to make something that looks aesthetically pleasing. And if you're going to build a Mando, a double Mando, a triple Mando on your course, make it look nice. Make it look like it belongs in your area. And that's another part of what we're doing with this triple Mando. So we've had, we posted this on Facebook and you guys are going to be shocked. We posted that we're going to be building this, and that's the reason the basket's not in its normal position. And you're going to be shocked by this, but we got about 85-90% negative comments on Facebook of all places. So huh. It was, yeah,
but I'm sure Reddit loved it. Right? I mean, Reddit was it's just the wrong crowd.
Yeah, that's what it was.
Yeah.
Reddit was probably more snarky. I think a lot of people didn't really understand what we were trying to do, because all we said was, hey, we're building a triple Mando. The baskets move forward. If you're coming to play, you should be aware of this. And sometimes I think we forget that people pay a little bit of attention to what Maple Hill does. And so it got to be a little bigger than maybe we wanted it to be. We just wanted to tell the people that were coming to play, you're not going into the woods for the next week or two. I think now that people see it and now that people understand, oh, spectators can actually, there's more spectator room, and it actually, I think it looks pretty good as far as a thing. It's going to present a better challenge. It looks nice and we'll have more spectators.
Do you feel like, and I agree that it does look nice and it makes sense with what you're saying, especially with the geography and yeah, and everything else with the area. I'm a little surprised and or disappointed that there's not more of a commercial tie to it, unless that's about to be, branded the such and so, the Smashbox TV bridge or something. I'm just surprised there's not more of a commercial tie.
We have had one person offer to pay for it.
How many have offered to burn it down?
everybody else.
I mean, just think of all the money you could get that way and then add that to the purse.
I'm uncomfortable putting Sparky's pep shop on somewhere on here. To me, it's right. That's interesting coming from me. But what I wouldn't mind doing is engraving a piece of wood and putting it on the inside that says Sparky's Pet Shop, and you know, people who can sponsor the bridge or the bridge the bridge such it is. I consider it a covered bridge. And for 4 feet, you are in fact just protected
the shortest one ever. Yeah.
Well, look, like I said, the first thing I thought of was, and I know this is probably pulling at maybe not so random these days with what's coming out, but it reminds me of the bridge from the movie Beetlejuice, which I think is up from Vermont. And it's a red covered bridge. It's the first thing I thought of when I'm going to pull up the picture of the bridge from Beetlejuice.
Oh, that's perfect. Yes.
Yeah. The exact thing I thought of the minute I saw it. I'm like, no, that's the bridge from Beetlejuice. That is so of its area.
It's a covered bridge. New England covered bridges look like that.
Sure.
So
exactly.
I didn't actually think about the Beetlejuice Bridge. That's great. Maybe we should call it Beetlejuice Bridge.
You just have to say Beetlejuice when you walk through it, like three times.
I've been trying to come up with a name for it, but Beetlejuice maybe works nicely.
When someone else, so I understand that logic. Johnny understands it. The internet may or may not. When someone else looks at it and or has a gut reaction or a knee jerk reaction to it of we'll say gimmicky or as our chat board said, mini golf, esque, so to speak. It's just a matter of knowing the backstory of what you're trying to accomplish with it. Right. I mean, other than. I guess that's all there is to it.
There is that, but, I do tend to implement things before they're ready. And it's possible this is another instance of that. But I felt it was important for Maple Hill to show an aesthetic for a Mando and say, look, you can make Mandos that look good. It's funny that I think aesthetics are really, really important. When someone goes to play a disc golf course, probably half of their opinion of the course is the aesthetics. If there's trash or a flower like that, that gives us a much, it doesn't change the shot we have to make, but it does change the way we feel. And I think that's really important. So, for me, this is an aesthetic. That's the big thing. But when we look at Texas States, which just happened, and actually a lot of the events already this year are using those little circles that have M on. And we all know that that's a man got to go left of that tree. And that's OK, because we have to design courses and we need spectators. However, there are some older courses that have woods, and between spectators and golfers, those woods are getting beaten up. And in order to protect the sanctity of the design, in my opinion, it's okay to add a Mando and say, this is the intended route. Disc golfers and spectators have caused these limbs and these trees to not be what they used to be, and we're going to adjust. Mm-hmm. And Mandos, I suspect, and John Houck isn't going to like this, but I suspect over the coming decade, there will be more and more Mandos on disc golf courses. And I think we're already seeing it.
Yeah. And I don't have a problem with it as long as, like you said, that the Mando is visually appealing. You know, I could see, looking at, hole one right there, looking at the covered bridge, the Beetlejuice bridge, I could also see that being something like a stone arch that runs very similar to the wall, something along those lines, I think could fit in aesthetically. That might be a little more dangerous putting stones over someone's head. I don't exactly know the logistics and what you'd have to build for that. I'm not an engineer, but I don't have honestly I guess I don't have a problem with the Mandos nearly like some people do.
Yeah, I guess I was just thinking along those lines, just the fact that it I can understand if somebody says, hey, I've done this. I went to the mini golf course and I had to hit it through a lighthouse that had a propeller on it, or I had to hit it into a clown's mouth. I could see where somebody makes an immediate draw. As nice as that may look, someone still could very easily look at that and be like, wait, you have me throwing through what now? Like it's clearly an artificial thing that was added out in the woods that's helping create the course in the hole. And as nice as it may look to some, others understandably could say, yeah, it looks a little gimmicky to me. I can understand that.
No, I can understand that. I think that I would not want to see something like this on every single course. Like going out to Dretzka, our local course, I don't necessarily want to see something like this, but I do think that they are going to be more and more required for some of our more well-worn courses, and especially some of the ones that we regularly hit on the tour, where we're getting a lot of spectators, where we're getting a lot of play. And those courses are probably getting more play than regular courses just because they're so popular and famous, Maple Hill being one of them.
Right. Yeah.
I just want to see a stack of tractors we have to throw around when we're in Des Moines. Stack them up.
Like a whole stack of them?
Yeah, a whole stack of them.
Might be hard to stack.
If we're going to go local, we got to keep it local.
How about just doing the tires? You could stack up the tires.
Ah, there you go. Why aren't we throwing through those? Right? I mean, big old tractor tires. Right.
Yeah. I wish I lived in Des Moines.
When you were a kid, or even to this day, if you played in a sandbox, was that just an old tractor tire filled with sand? Because that's what we did in Wisconsin.
No. Sometimes, yeah. Not always. No. Sometimes it was a wooden box.
We had a 12 by 12 sandbox that was built out of probably 2 by 12s. Actually, they were probably really 2 by 12s back then.
Yeah, none of this today's stuff.
Yeah.
Kids these days, those 1¾ by 11½s. Those damn assholes.
But I want to tell you the game that we played because it was super fun.
Okay.
We would put the hose in one side of the sandbox, the water hose. And then we would build a little retaining wall to contain the water. Mm-hmm. And then the water would obviously at some point go over the retaining wall, and you'd have to build another retaining wall. And 3 hours later, the entire sandbox was full of water and all of the water was contained in these little retaining walls. And that was what passed for fun back in the 1920s.
Yeah,
it was a depressing time. I don't think you were playing in the 1920s. Anyway, it was in for me. Maybe I'm unique in this. Maybe we need some other Wisconsinites to chime in. For me,
I mean,
my first two or three sand boxes weren't really boxes at all. They were huge tractor tires that just got filled in with sand. And that was a common, and they were great because you could sit on them comfortably on the edge when you were playing. I don't know. Maybe that was just a my broke family thing. I don't know. That's
so you're talking like sandboxes at your house?
Yeah, like at my house.
No.
Like in our backyard. That was my sandbox, which wasn't a sandbox. It was more of a sand tire.
No, see, we grew up doing lawn ornaments, so we had literally like a sand pit that
you
was
played with lawn ornaments?
Well, sure.
I'm thinking of tree ornaments. I'm thinking of Christmas tree.
Oh, no.
I'm like, why do you have Christmas
tree? No, lawn ornaments. Like we grew up, my grandfather and like we had those concrete lawn ornaments. So when you see like a bird bath or a set of Dutch kids or anything like that, like we did that. Like that was thing. So we always had this giant sand pit for the concrete that was refilled with new sand every like month or so. They would some come dump truck would dump a whole bunch of new sand, so we always had like crazy fresh amounts sand. Of fresh sand so that I was we were spoiled that way. Of course, every Saturday morning you had to get your ass up and open up concrete molds, but you know, there's good and the bad.
I guess
So I've never actually been on your after show before, and it's really nice being on the after show.
Yeah, that's, you know.
We like are you trying to insinuate like that to we sidetrack?
We like to weave in and out of the after show sometimes.
All right. Back to the silly shit you're doing.
So what else is going on at Maple Hill? Where else are we going to see some changes, Mr. Dodge?
I saw rubber ducks. Okay.
We got the rubber ducks. Someone actually emailed us and said, hey, I will sponsor that. And I had to have Jess talk me down and say, Steve, that's not a good idea.
Yeah.
So there won't be huge rubber ducks on hole 14. I'll say that.
Just some little ones.
There might be little ones. I won't rule that out. But on hole 9, if you guys remember, we made that into a really long par 4 last year.
Mm-hmm.
And this year on Thursday, Friday, it's going to be a par 5. We're actually punching it across the water another 250, 300 feet. It's crazy. Steve Brinster came up with this like 10 years ago, and we're finally doing it.
Across what water?
So you know where Nine's basket is on that little peninsula behind the wall?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
You just keep going back and to the right. There's another pond over the pond. You just keep going over there to where old 10 Diamond T used to be.
Okay.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. That sounds exactly. Terrible. Wow.
I'm just
thinking about
logistics and backups.
Yeah. I'm thinking about how many groups will be on the hole safely at the same time.
Are you questioning Brinster?
No, I like him, but.
So another nice thing about this, hole 9 is hard to spectate. Hole 9, par 5, you're going to be able to stand behind that because it's a natural amphitheater, that hill, and you'll be able to watch the shots coming over the pond towards the pin. So it'll be another nice spectating spot. And Ted, I would imagine like
the green will be a spectating spot.
10 green, 9 green
on
the par 5 will be a spectator spot.
Because that's, in theory, if I'm just doing my geography right, that's not too far from what would be 14s. Is that over by 14s?
Yeah, you're probably 150, 200 feet away from hole 14 gold tee.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah,
it's exactly where I think it is. Okay.
It is exactly there. Yep.
Interesting.
So anyway, we're excited about having that par 5. We've never had a par 5. I've always not liked par 5s. But the mob finally convinced me that we're going to give it a go. So if you want to come to Maple Hill on Thursday and Friday and watch par 5, you can do that. And then 11 is going to be another one. It's going to be a par 3 on Thursday, Friday, and it's going to be about a 600-foot par 3. It's a nice downhill. It'll be in a spot where some discs land and some discs can't quite get to. And then hole 16, we're extending the basket. If that's Kevin Jones's ace hole, from where the basket is, you go about 45 degrees left up the hill into the woods. And so that'll be a par 4. And a lot of this, Calvin Heimberg did us a big favor last year and stuck around after the tournament. And he went around with the Gator and talked with Gage about some of the things we were looking at. And he told us his opinion of different pin positions. And he's the one who planted the seed for hole 1. He said, I thought you're going to have the short pin be one day and then the long pin the next. And I said, I think that's a little crazy. And he said, no, I think that's what people want. And that's how we can make Maple Hill into sort of a course and a half, if you will. And, so we have we're changing a 4 to a 3, and then we're changing a 4 to on hole 1, and then a 4 to a 5 on hole 9. So, on the scorecard, the par for the front 9 and the par for the back 9, they're the same for all 4 days, but we have 4 holes with different pars. So it just balances out. And I'm excited to see what happens.
Yeah, I honestly, Kelvin is 100% right. I love the idea of a short hole 1. I really do.
Yeah.
Because especially because it's so close to the water. If it weren't so close to the water, I don't think it would be a good hole. But it is so close that going at that for a birdie is going to be a difficult shot. And then you're looking at more than likely people are going to bail out long or left. Yep. And then have some sort of dangerous putt at it. So I think it's great.
And it's basically reminiscent of the hole in 2004, which was that short pin, but it was from the short tee. And at the time, 300 feet over a pond was scary, and people would throw 350 and then they'd have the putt back. So now we're just doing the same thing, but from 500 feet instead of 300.
Yeah, and that was going to be, even as you were talking about hole one, maybe almost playing too easy, that was going to be a thought of mine as well. What if at some point you abandon the long pin entirely and you were having people play to that shorter pin? But it sounds like obviously you're kind of mixing the best of both worlds here and having the regular hole one long pin and then just playing the short pin as opposed to going kind of that to that medium pin.
And there's a subset of people that have been screaming for different pins between hole or between rounds for years, like significant, not just, hey, we're going to push this back 30 more feet or it's going to slide a little bit to the right. Like people want different pins. Like they want almost like a different course, something that's going to challenge a different shot on any particular hole. You know, imagine taking hole two and moving it 50 feet to the left behind the woods or something silly like that. And just making it a different shot. Like that's what people are really kind of looking for in some of the course design these days.
So talking about course design, just to finish to button up your point, Johnny, I would not do that at GMC. I wouldn't have Fox Run have significantly different pin positions because they only play it twice anyway.
Okay. I agree with you, but if you're on one course like that, I can completely understand it. It doesn't make you're right. It doesn't make sense at like a Beaver State Fling where if they're playing, depending on what course, I don't even know what they're doing for Beaver State. I'm doing the directing. I have no clue. If they do Milo East and West, then it makes no sense. If you've got like a Milo Gold where you're playing the same course four rounds, then that's a course where I could really see some good significant shifting of pins. So yeah, I'm with you.
So this is our start. I could foresee, let's go 10 years down the road. I could see having 9 significant different pins, but I should say 8 to 10, that I could see a number that high happening, depending how this year is received. So, and on the women's side, we're only changing 2 holes, just so you know. Just 1 and 9, 11 and 16 didn't work out for where their tees and the pins go. So, other fun things we're doing this year, we're doing our Maple After Dark again. I actually think, well, get on the email list, go to the mvpopen.com, get on the email list to find out exactly when all the registration opens for that. We've got, the $20,000 giveaway again. We have the ice cream social. The $20,000 giveaway is on Friday. Ice cream social is on Saturday. The pond jump is on Sunday. That's our basics.
And the $20,000 giveaway, similar structure as last year, new rules, different rules.
Similar, but we are changing the second thrower. No matter what the first thrower does, the second thrower does not get a throw.
I love it. That's great. Just sit there and watch me throw, buddy.
last year there was concern that the second thrower might have to throw if the first thrower didn't get in the circle, and I think that put a lot of pressure on the second thrower. They were just standing there nervous, and they didn't need to be. So we're going to get rid of that. We're just going to say, if you're second thrower, you don't get to throw at all. Don't even be nervous.
Great.
Terry, I'm kidding.
He's lying.
I'm
kidding.
Yeah, no, I was just trying to think of like all the different ways that I was kind of just laughing in my head thinking about when Johnny said, is it going to be similar? Because I thought, no,
it's never.
Steve's never going to keep something.
Well, that was the big complaint last year was that the second thrower never got a chance to beat the first thrower. If assuming that the first thrower had made it in the circle at that point, it was like, oh, cool. You win. Yay. And then the second person goes home with second place. Like nobody wants it's
It wasn't building to a climax.
It wasn't building to a more exciting climax, correct?
Here is the plan for this year. It's basically the same format, except the end. Mm-hmm. And both people would get to throw, and whoever got the CTP would get to throw first. Mm-hmm. And then if they get in the circle, they win.
Mm. Okay.
Does that make sense? So both people get to throw, and then whoever CTP gets to throw first. And then if you get it in the circle, you win. If you don't, the other person gets their chance at it.
Is the circle smaller this year?
Not yet, but okay. Maybe.
I'm just thinking,
making it smaller.
Is it like C1 circle, or is it kind of an island area next to the basket? I'm just trying to think of ways to make it more difficult.
It was just C1, and I feel like that's enough. That's a 500-foot shot getting in C1, and a third of C1 is water. Yeah. So yeah, I think the shot's plenty hard. I don't know who won on the women's side. I don't remember, but maybe Holland Hanley. She skipped off the water, if my memory's right, and got up and was just like, yay, that was a great shot, but a little nerve wracking. The East Coast Metal Roofing is back, and we're doing the $20,000 giveaway on Friday. And a lot of people had a lot of fun getting money when they're pro won. A lot of people made friends with people that didn't just meet somebody and you all got $100. We have disc dyeing clinics Tuesday and Wednesday leading up to it. We're going to have a skins match on Wednesday. We're going to have a pro-am tournament on Tuesday where we only have 12 spots, and then you'll get to play with, you know, the likes of Gannon or Ricky or Simon or Owen or whoever it is. And your name will be picked out of a hat, and then you get to choose which player you want. And yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. So we've got a lot going on, and we're really excited about it.
Yeah, and unfortunately, we're only about 5 months away from it. But I am glad we're hearing some of the details to keep people excited, which actually kind of brings me backwards in the questioning of what has it been about this season that's gotten you particularly excited or impressed or provided more content for you and your podcast. Like we've had a pretty solid start here to 2024. What's been standing out for you?
Are you talking about watching?
Yeah. Just the pro tour, the play, everything that we've seen. We've got obviously one FPO major already under the, under our belt.
And five different FPO winners.
We've got another major at the end of the month, but one is under our belt. And then all the events that we've played, including this exciting last weekend, what stands out to you?
I'm going to start here, and who knows where I'll end up, but I'm going to say Anakin Sten.
Anakin Sten.
Yeah. She stands out to me. And by that, I mean, and I read this in UltiWorld and it just rang true. She going into the final round, she was tied with Owen and Kristen was just a few back. And I don't know exactly what the line said, but it said, I didn't think Anakin was going to win. And I was like, I didn't either. But Anakin Sten, who's shot a total of 2 1,000 rated rounds in her life in the two previous rounds in this tournament, and then the number one player and the number two player. And I have to go ahead and tell you, according to the United Disc Golf Rankings, which is the only rankings that matter.
Yep.
No. So I combine all of the different rankings into one.
Yeah.
And Owen Scoggins was actually on top. Owen Scoggins was number one in the United rankings. We'll find out Thursday if she's still on top, but I suspect she's not. But anyway, the 1-2 player behind Anakin Sten are tied with her. To do another 1,000 rated round, she's only done two in her life. And like, that was crazy. Mm-hmm. But she did it, and who knows exactly the reason, but the reason that she had the opportunity to do it, there are so many quality players, and we've all been singing it for years on the men's side. any given day, 40 guys can win. And that's probably still true, unless Anthony Barella is playing. And then that was a joke for the other 39 guys. Don't worry, you can still win.
If Anthony doesn't show up.
But on the women's side, there's 12, 15 women that could win any event. And then Anakin Sten shows up and says, by the way, there's actually 16. And it's just like, wow, there is so much depth on the women's side. And obviously the depth on the men's side is ridiculous. If you want to be if you're a male and you want to be a professional disc golfer, you need to be ridiculously good to earn your tour card and then to stay on tour. Those guys, you need to be 10-20 just to even think about it. And that's mind-boggling to just thinking about what that means. But women are routinely throwing 1,000 rated. There are women 15 deep that any one of them could win. There's very few runaways now. It's exciting to the very last hole. And I'm my goal when I started the Pro Tour was to be right here. My goal was to be able to sit back and literally watch the best disc golfers in the world play disc golf on my television. And I'm able to do it. And I have to force myself to get outside in the morning so that I can be active and tire myself out. I'm old, but I'm not too old that I can't do anything. And then I come in and I've done my 18 minutes of exercise. So I'm comfortable watching 6 hours of disc golf. So I think that's a good ratio. Yeah. But for me, the parity is the thing that is making this super fun. Who's going to win the Pro Tour point series? I have no idea. There's a lot of players that could win it. And Calvin and Ricky are not among those two yet. I fully expect that they will get in the mix, but they're not there right now. So it's all very, very exciting for me.
With that, do you feel like there's been a surprise? I mean, Anakin, I guess sounds like she would fit that description or qualify for that. But do you feel like there's been any other legitimate surprises that we've seen here in 2024?
Evelina apparently improved her putt,
yeah,
and is a threat to win every week. Mm-hmm. Last year, she was not a threat to win every week. When you're 2 and 3 putting most holes, you're not a threat to win. She's cleaned that up and she's a threat to win. I think, is that a surprise? I mean,
it sounds like it. I would follow up if you're talking about people regularly winning. Are you surprised to see Kristen not winning?
That wasn't
following up.
That was going to be my surprise, is that we haven't seen Kristen win more than one event yet. Like we've seen 5 events, and I think a lot of people expected her to win, you know, 2 or 3 of them,
or 4 or 5 of them.
If you, I listened to this new podcast called Disc Golf Daily, with this guy Steve Dodge on it. Mm-hmm. And he said,
doesn't that have zero stars?
It has 0 stars, but only 5 people have rated it. So it's, it's not a big enough sample size yet.
Okay, go on.
But he said, Kristen is obviously the shoe in the odds on favorite to be player of the year, but there's no way with the depth of the field. And I called this a month ago. With the depth of the field, there's no way we can expect her to win week in and week out. I will expect her to win more events than any other woman on the tour. That's my expectation. And I would expect her to be the player of the year. But dominate? No, not at all. There's too many good players.
See, and I don't know if she's going to be player of the year or not. With the time she's going to take off, going back overseas, I think she clearly has to perform well at the majors. If she performs well at the majors, she'll be a shoe in, but I don't know. Their competition is very, very deep these days.
It really is. It's one of my favorite words. It's super fun.
It is.
All right.
So that's what I want. There's only one other thing I want to say regarding my tournament, the MVP Open OTB.
Yeah.
And then I'm happy to wrap this up, or you guys can keep talking, and I'll just move away slowly. But we have a new host hotel, and it's the Homewood Suites in Worcester. And this is funny. It's $195 a night, which in Worcester is cheap. So my apologies to everybody from outside of Worcester. But it's normally the room is $295. So $195 is actually a really good deal. It sleeps four, you get your breakfast, and you have a kitchen in your room and all that jazz. The thing that excites me though is I called a bunch of hotels, and I called the Homewood Suites, and they said, why don't you come down? They said that what they actually said was, are you ever in the area? And I was like, I live in the area. So I said, yes, my wife will be in the area next Monday. Because we have date night on our date night is Tuesday. And so I was like, if I could start it Monday night, that'd be great. And she said, well, why don't you come down Monday night? I'll show you around the hotel, and then we will we'll comp you a room. You can spend the night and have breakfast and see what our hotel is all about. And that was the first time that I'd ever been treated as by this is Homewood Suites by Hilton, as somebody that mattered. Like all I am is the event organizer of a disc golf event, and they want to comp me a room. For me, that was really special. And that's a whole different level of someone in corporate America appreciating disc golf. And I think that's going to, I hope to goodness it happens again next year. I'm going to say, I don't know if your hotel is any good. Now I got to try it again. Make sure you didn't go down. Make sure the sheets are still nice. So anyway, it seems like something very tiny. It cost them $40 to do, but it had a ridiculously large impact on me because they said, we care about you. And I think that's a great thing for corporate America to say to disc golf.
Yeah. And just think about like date night, how much cheaper it was the next morning when breakfast was already covered. Like, I see your angle here. You're like, no, honey, I'll take care of breakfast. I got this.
I still got to go down and get it.
Yeah. And you're like, no. You get two glasses of orange juice today. We know how expensive it normally is. This morning, two glasses, orange juice.
I will go ahead and say they had like Bob Evans style biscuits or Cracker Barrel style biscuits, and then a nice sausage patty, and then an egg patty. It was kind of weird, but then with some cheese on both. My breakfast sandwich was awesome. It was great.
Yeah, it sounds like they did you right. So needless to say, that's the host hotel. I'm sure there's a code or a link that they should click on if people find it from the website or punch in the code MVP OTB CTP OPP.
It's linked to from Eventbrite and the website, which is mvpopen.com or the mvpopen.com.
Okay. Perfect. All right. So good to know. And of course, we're going to expect that there's plenty of locals and enthusiasts, but then your course, and everything that goes along with that event probably has the largest out of town draw, that or Green Mountain, because really there's
no one in Green
Mountain. They've got a player base, but yet it doesn't, most of those people are coming from outside of town. So
you're missing at least two events that have bigger out of town draws, and there's probably more.
Well, Ledgestone does, and
Pro Worlds and USDGC definitely do.
Sure.
And then Ledgestone, we're probably close to Ledgestone.
Well, there's so many players that are at Ledgestone. I mean, when you're talking about,
well, you could argue
800 then, to 1200 players that are,
you could argue that there. GBO is that way then too, Glassboro.
Yeah. And I guess I am thinking about
if you're talking players that are coming in
pro tour events, that then have the player bases and anyway. All right, so that's where they can find it.
I'm gonna pitch this hotel one more time.
Yeah, please.
This hotel is 1 minute away. It's a 1 minute walk to Union Station in Worcester, which is the train station. Mm. And there's trains to Boston. And if you fly into Boston, you get on the train, you come to Union Station, you walk across the street to the hotel, and we have shuttles every morning that bring you to the course and every night that take you home. So done. You don't even need to rent a car.
We've been on that shuttle, Terry.
Well, what I was going to say, when you started talking about the hotel, I was thinking one of the things that they were talking about offering to you was running a shuttle bus, knowing how much of a challenge parking is, running a shuttle bus from the hotel right to the course. That's where I thought you were going with that.
No. Well, we're running the shuttle. We have a partnership with an offsite place where we're going to have everybody parking. This last year we had four different lots. The town was generous enough to give us the four lots, which was great, but we wanted to put everybody in one lot. So the shuttle drivers know where to drive people. It makes things a lot easier. So we've got one location for all the spectators to go. It's about 7 minutes off site and life's going to be easy and we'll be running. We have triple the shuttle buses of last year.
Okay. Almost like running a train. So one of the questions that we kind of touched on was the idea of when you have these changes in ideas and you're a committee of yourself and a few others or getting feedback from Calvin Heimberg, at what point do you have a conversation and with whom with the pro tour? And do they ever are like, no, don't do that. What is that conversation like?
We have conversations with the Pro Tour on many different levels, basically nonstop. At least once a month, on the levels of competition, on the levels of spectator passes, parking, marketing. And those are all different groups of people that we're talking with. And those conversations pretty much go on all the time. As you get within about 4 or 5 months of the tournament, they become bi-weekly and then weekly. And it's by no means just me on the call. We have our staff coordinator, we have our partnership director, we have Charlie, who I just call an advisor. We have my brother who heads up the gold pass or the insider pass people. There's lots of people, and we have Jimmy who does the parking, but there's lots of people on our side that need to understand the relationships and what it is that we're all working towards. There's a lot of moving parts, and I can't imagine, the spreadsheets and that the Pro Tour has to try to keep track of all these moving parts. And we're just one little cog, and they've got these cogs going, and they get bigger as the event approaches. But as the event approaches, there's other cogs that are just growing, and like we're right now just becoming a cog. And it's fascinating watching all of this happen. And I feel like the Pro Tour is actually getting their feet underneath them, and we have a bit of a cadence now. When Brian Cole emails and says, "Here's the sheet, and there's 180 things to do," it's not really daunting at all. You just look at it and go, okay, here's the 12 new ones. They got rid of some and these were modified. Here we go.
Yeah. I do feel like even being able to see it from behind the scenes now and again, just the logistics of the Pro Tour is amazing. Over the change over the last 3 years has been, and a lot of that comes with personnel, putting the right personnel in the right spots and having all the personnel, you know, not having Seth Fenley do 92% of the things, you know, that Steve Dodge can't do. You know, it's just the way it works. You know, they have spent a ton of cash on hiring people, and it's clearly working out for them. And I'm really excited to see it.
And they're spending cash. They got Jomez, which I think was a really good Now there's a really good synergy between those two media companies. And then with DGPT Europe, simplifying, in my opinion, positively simplifying the Pro Tour on both continents. And I'm personally very excited to have more Europeans be able to play in DGPT Europe, get some exposure over here in the U.S., and then come over to the U.S. Like before Nicholas Antola came over and started playing on the Pro Tour, I didn't know much about him. But there are a bunch of people who I met last year when Paul Macbeth went over, and now I'll meet again this year with DGPT Europe. And I'm going to, when they finally do come over to the States, I'm going to know their names already, and I'm going to be fans of theirs. And that's, in my opinion, that's really, really exciting. And there's a lot of positive synergies by having DGPT Europe exist and DGPT, I guess, just US exist and be able to.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
To get people going across both sides.
A couple things before we let you go. Let's recap or get a plug officially here for what you're doing. You referenced your podcast earlier. You may not be 500 episodes in, but if you're going to do it daily, it feels like you'll catch up real quick. So tell us exactly the premise and where they can find it and what you're doing with your podcast right now.
I don't actually know exactly where. Well, they can go on any podcast app and type in Disc Golf Daily and then scroll down a bunch and it'll show up. It's orange with a white logo. That's the easiest way to find it. Because the website's like podbean.discgolfdaily.com. It's some stupid name.
You got away from Weebly. Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah, OPP.Weebly. But the premise is it's a lot like your show. It's 8 to 10 minutes long, and it's very concise coverage of the news and then stats that talk about the growth of the game. Hey, you found it. What's the website there? Was I close?
It is discgolfdaily.podbean.com.
Oh, I had the Podbean and Disc Golf Daily backwards. Okay. Yeah. So, and that's what the covers look like. But so the idea is on Monday, we have a guy named Brian Frawley who wraps up what happened over the weekend in the tournaments. On Tuesday, we go over people earning how much money people have earned. On Wednesday, we go over course, the podcast I just recorded before I came on with you guys, talks about course growth and PDGA growth. And by PDGA growth, we go over membership. We go over tournaments. We go over how many disc and basket approvals relative to the past, so we can actually see how well we're growing as a sport. And then we use UDisc to track how many new courses. And I'll just give you don't even need to bother listening tomorrow because we got 21 new courses this past week.
Damn,
wow. Three a day. That's just craziness. So we talk about the growth of disc golf, and then I also talk about the news. I find 3 to 5 little news bits that I think are fun and engaging, and that also demonstrate that more and more people are caring about disc golf. For example, the last article I talk about tomorrow is just a random sports reporter for a a newspaper. He, over Easter weekend, a buddy said, "Hey, let's go play disc golf." And he went and played and had a great time. And it's just something as simple as that, where a random sports reporter plays disc golf and says, "I want to share this with people." And I think 10 years ago, he wouldn't have bothered. But now there's like a disc golf scene. So he thinks it has some legitimacy. I'm going to go ahead and talk about this. And that's happening more and more and more and more. And then on Fridays, I do my Andy Rooney, opinion of the day. So each day has a specific focus. And Thursdays is the United Disc Golf Rankings. I skipped that. But so each day is a specific focus, and we go through the news with that focus, and it all happens in 8 to 10 minutes.
Okay. So everyone can go out there, find it, discgolfdaily.podbean.com or any of your podcast apps you should subscribe, and then you can take it all in. Is there any, I don't want to say bigger, that's not maybe the right word, but you know, the overall premise, this is the vision that you're seeing with it, in that do you see the expanding to other stuff, or are you right where you want to be with it, and you just need more viewers or listeners?
Yeah. Disc golf news and growth in 10 minutes is the premise, and Monday to Friday. Speaking of Seth Fendley would like to fill out one of the 2 weekend days with some content, and he actually wants to talk about the history of the Pro Tour. So I don't know whether it'd be Saturday or Sunday, but then he would every week he would interview somebody that was integral to the start of the Pro Tour, and he's broken it down. He's asked me who should we talk to, but he has season zero, which is all the warm-ups to the Pro Tour, and then season one is all the people that were involved and all the tournament directors, and he wants to get a pretty granular view of the history of the Pro Tour. And I think he's got like 85 or 90 episodes mapped out through the first 3 years. And ideally he would keep it going and maybe someday catch up with where we are today. And then it can just be a weekly thing, interviewing the TD the week after the event or something like that.
I feel like a lot of those episodes banned in tears, for better or worse. Sometimes happy tears, sometimes sad tears.
Yeah, there's going to be some truth, to that for sure. It was a very. I'm super happy that I had an opportunity to help as much as I did make the Pro Tour happen. My list of people without whom it wouldn't have happened is well over 100, and you guys are among the first on that list.
Well, clearly it would not have started at all without you. So,
well, Steve, because I know you love numbers, and these guys also got their start only because of things like the Pro Tour coming into existence and people wanting more numbers. On a very last minute idea, I thought to reach out to Stat Mando today and just give him a very high level overarching thought of, hey, we've been around since November 11th of 2014, and also more specifically our first live streamed event of the Sylmar Open.
Please don't tell me that they told us how bad our ratings have gone down November 11th.
Our live stream in April of 2014, and they just got back to me recently with a little info, and I'm going to give you a couple of these numbers, and I'll save the rest for maybe our the continuation of the show. But some things they just shot at me include, since 2014 and since our podcast has started, let me ask you, how many PDGA events do you think have happened since the start of our podcast? PDGA sanctioned events, how many would you guess has happened?
$120,000.
I was going to guess 82,000.
You're a little more than double. There's been 54,319 PDGA events since we started the podcast. To follow that up, there's been 174 majors that have taken place.
I noticed you're not letting me guess anymore. So if you miss by enough, you don't get to guess.
Correct. And then there's been 150 elite level events since our podcast has started. And obviously the majority of those being pro tour events, because the pro tour didn't yet literally exist when our podcast began. Those were still national tours that we were, you know, primarily talking about, and then the national tours, and then eventually the pro tours became equal in terms of designation with the pro, with the national tour. Yeah. It's been a long process, but 54,319 PDGA events, 174 of those being majors, 150 of those being elite events. And then you kind of touched on this. You said you didn't know Nicholas Antola prior. Well, this is phenomenal. People in the current Disc Golf Pro Tour top 20 points who signed up for the PDGA after our podcast started.
Oh, good. Yeah.
Includes.
Well, wait. The number of people in the top 20.
Weren't even PDGA members when our podcast started.
How many of those? How many of the 20? Gannon. I'm trying to think. I'm going to go.
It's got to be Gannon. Anthony probably was a PDGA member, but he wasn't a pro.
Yeah, he wasn't a pro. He was probably still throwing discs back and forth. I would think that the number has to be 13. 13 of those top 20.
I was going to go with 9.
Steve's closer. I believe the number is 8 of the MPOs. And you want to guess how many of the top 20 women?
Johnny, you made me push it up.
I pushed you up.
You want to guess how many women weren't even PDGA members that are now in the top 20? Yeah.
I mean, Pat and Paige were.
I'm going to say 14.
Yeah. Yeah. Owen was. You're going to push me up. I'm going to go 16.
I'll read them off. You count them.
Oh, no, Holcomb.
You count them.
Yeah.
Missy Gannon, Kristen Tatar, Holland Hanley, Natalie Ryan, Ella Hansen, Luke Lorenzen, Kat Murch, Anakin Sten, Cadence Burge, Stacy Kiefer, Hannah Wynn, Raven Klein. Weren't even PDGA members.
12 of them.
When our podcast began.
Was there 7 or 8? 7?
What?
12?
Yeah, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, it was 7, 12,
Terry.
8, 9, 10, 11. I count 12.
It was 12. He was, yeah.
Anyway, and then on the men's side, it was Gannon Burr, Kyle Klein, Nicholas Antola. I mean, for God's sake,
those are your
Gannon
top three
Burr
players.
Was 4 years old when we started the podcast, or 8 years old. Mason Ford, Joey Buckets, Joey Anderson, Cole Radalin, Ezra Aderhold, Yakub Samarad were all of the men that weren't yet PDGA members.
Yakub's in the top 20?
Yes, it's in the top 20. Huh. Anyway, all of that, of course, thank you to StatMando. I've got a few other interesting stats. Also in 2014, and celebrating a birthday today. They didn't have that. I had that in my brain. Valerie Mundahano won FJ12 Worlds, won Junior Worlds the year our podcast started. So yes, we're old. Yes, Valerie's celebrating a birthday.
And she's married to Mason Ford.
Yeah. So some wild stuff there.
And we're about to see, I mean, we're going to get to November where we're going to celebrate our 10-year anniversary. There's going to be new disc golf babies. I mean, Katrina Allen, Macy Vela-Diaz, players that we watched are going to be mothers and fathers. It's, you know, I see all these pictures of Paul carrying Pablo around airports, and it makes me chuckle thinking, like, not even a sparkle in your eye when we started our podcast, buddy.
Yep. So pretty crazy. All right, Steve, parting shots or thoughts before we let you go here.
Just that I love you guys.
We love you too.
We love you too, buddy. We appreciate you.
Thanks to all of the people that watch that have encouraged you guys to continue doing what you do. And I'm just one of the happiest people on the earth.
Yeah. There's a lot of people encourage us to stop too. But we won't listen to them.
Yeah. I'm deaf in one ear and I'll keep it that way. Steve, again, you to me, there was no other more obvious person to ask on for our 500th. We have you on more than just at the 100 podcast marks, and we're happy to do so, but we'd love to have you for every 100th moving forward. And I listened to the first minute or two of a few of them today and to think, oh God, we got to another 100 and another 100 and here we are. I would have never thought it. And so much of our show and so much of what we do came from the live streaming, as I said earlier, and then just weekly to have something to talk about, which also is a byproduct of the vision you had with the Pro Tour and where we're at today. So thank you so much. Keep coming up with all your silly ideas so that I can challenge Terry, you along with everyone else. We love it.
Do you still consider yourself one take Terry?
Yeah, for the most part, if I don't F something up in a very, very quick first few seconds, I just keep rolling with it. Why bother?
I remember, I'm going to guess it was 2000 and it was, you were doing a podcast. It was, I think it was before Smashbox. I'm going to guess 2012. And you interviewed me. I think we were doing a Vibram Birdie Bash.
Okay.
And my memory is I had a red shirt on. That's really all I remember. But right before the podcast started, right? You remember?
Yeah, I was doing a vlog, an old school vlog, where I was just checking in with you. It was probably it could have been the 2010 Worlds, AM Worlds, you and I talked, or yeah. It could have been at one of the other events or the Birdie Bash that we ended up doing together. That's how I would just start the vlog, and you were, yeah, okay, go on.
And you told me that you had never, you were one take Terry. We're just going to get this done real quick. And I decided it might be a good idea to just jump up and down when you started talking. And you stopped. You were like, I haven't ever done two takes like this. And I think you were a little miffed.
I recall being a little, yeah, speechless at how to react. And I think I was laughing. And I think it's still out there in that same format. I think I still release it as it was. Thank
you. I think that was one of the first times we met. And it's been fun ever since.
It certainly has. Thank you for the friendship and the faith and the trust and the love and everything you've given us and you've given to the disc golf community, buddy. We appreciate you and looking forward to seeing you next time.
Peace out.
All right. Good night.
Good night.
All right.
Steve Dodge.
Thank you so
MVP
much.
Open by OTB.
Sure.
This year.
And next year we'll take out the bye and then it'll be just MVP OTB along with something else that's added in there. Thank you to Steve Dodge for joining us. All these years later, he literally asked 2 minutes before the show, what's the agenda? What's the timeline look like? Where the F you been? Nothing's changed. We just keep rolling wherever it takes us, it takes us. So thank you to Steve for joining us tonight. Thank you to Statmandu who gave a few of those stats earlier. And then also a couple of you have super chatted. Ryan Pilcher,
who's, thank you.
I know, been around for a long time and is a huge supporter. Thank you so much, Ryan. Ray Zerhausen. I just should say Ray also just jumped in and super chatted. And I think there might've been a few others earlier. So seriously, thank you to everyone that's jumped on board in that capacity.
Our goal is to get to 500 super chats tonight.
Yes. Only 498 to go.
All right. We're going to quickly talk about the event this past weekend, the DGBT Texas State Disc Golf Championships presented by Lone Star Disc. We'll start with the MPO where Anthony Barella takes down his second Disc Golf Pro Tour event of the season out of, what's the number? Four? Two out of four. That's batting pretty good right there. That's Hall of Fame odds right there. If you're batting 500%. So. Or batting 500, 50%.
There you go.
Or I mean, if you're batting 500%, that's the Hall of Fame odds too, as well, Terry. I'm not going to lie.
I would hope so.
So Anthony Barella wins this in kind of dramatic fashion. Like, he had a pretty solid lead going into the final round. Ezra on the front nine made a really good run to kind of get it within about three strokes. But then Ezra Aderhold tailed off a little bit, had some issues. And what almost nobody saw coming was Gannon Burr basically birdieing out the back nine and coming to within a stroke of Barella. Now, Barella did lay up the final hole on 18 to make it a little bit closer than what the one stroke felt like. But ultimately, what kind of could have been a snoozer of a final round turned out to be relatively exciting. And as always, we know the control room loves that. But so congratulations to Anthony Barella on his second Pro Tour win of the season. He got the chess.com and now the Lone Star Texas State Championship. So congratulations, Anthony Barella. Like we said, second place Gannon Burr, third place Ezra Aderhold, fourth place Matty O, which is a name we haven't really talked too much about this season, but he's kind of sneaking around down there. Fifth place Calvin Heimberg, still without a win this season. Sixth place Gavin Rathbun, another guy who we weren't even sure if he was going to be on the tour this year. And chess.com and this event, both Gavin has had really good showings. I'm going to bring up Gavin's stats. I think he had a rough outing at Waco, taking 96th, but otherwise sixth at chess.com, 96th at Waco, 15th at Open at Austin, and sixth at this Texas State Disc Golf Championships. So honestly, Gavin having almost a surprising season. Now, nobody would be surprised if he hadn't come back from the injury. If he had never had the injury, I don't think we'd be sitting here being surprised by how good he is. But the fact that he did come back from this injury and is playing so well, awesome, 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 Gavin. Three-way tie for seventh place between Braden Sides, Nathan Queen, Mason Ford, and rounding out your top 10 is Kyle Klein. We will go down to FPO real quick here. As we said, Anakin Sten wins this in... 3,000 rated rounds, her first 3,000 rated rounds. And as well, Kristen Tatar makes a run at the end to get within two strokes. It was close going into 18. There was a chance, depending on what happened. And Kristen went OB on hole 18, which gave, we'll say, an easier win to Anakin. But I guess I'll get more to Anakin in a little bit, but third place was Own Scoggins, continuing her domination of the podiums. Tie for fourth place, Missy Gannon and Luque Lorenzen. In sixth place, Rebecca Cox and Sarah Hokum. And a four-way tie for eighth to round out your top 10. Emily Weatherman, a 909 rated, I think she's 19 years old, out of Texas. So a really great showing for her. Lisa Fakus, also a Texas native, Holland Hanley, and Valerie Mondahano, another Texas native.
Texans are turning out.
Yeah. Holland Hanley, technically, her hometown is Grapevine, Texas. So a four-way tie between four Texans for you to round out your top 10. I was going to say with Anakin, I've seen a lot of posts. I don't want to say a lot. I've seen a few posts this week since the event, people saying something along the lines of, are you serious? No one even knew who Anakin was before this win, or be real. You didn't know, you'd never heard of Anakin before. And I want to say, if you hadn't heard of Anakin, it's because you haven't been paying attention to FPO.
Yeah, you know, she didn't.
I can understand.
She's clearly new to the winner's circle on the pro tour, but we've seen her before, mm-hmm. and we've seen her perform.
She's been around for like 4 or 5 years, solidly.
And obviously with PCS taking place and we saw her there, it's not like She just appeared out of thin air.
We've never seen her before. She's not Emily Weatherman. Had Emily Weatherman won this, I could understand people like, who the heck is that? I honestly don't know if I'd heard the name Emily Weatherman before this. But everybody else in that top 10 is a known commodity, including Anakin. And I think this course, I don't want to say it favored a lefty, but what I will say is that it was favorable to lefties. I think that this particular course for the FPO was much more even handed than what we've since than your average course. I think your average course tends to lean a little bit more righty friendly. And this one did not do that. This one, it really helped to have a lefty or a really good forehand on this course. And it showed based on where some of the OB was and some of the placement of the baskets. And I think that's one of the things that really helped Anakin excel and elevate her game. I mean, plus draining putts like she was doing, that never seems to hurt. So, so congratulations to Anakin, a phenomenal showing. As we said, five different winners in the FPO field over the last five events. And it's really exciting. So Terry, looking at the FPO, who's the next player that you think might win one that hasn't?
Well, your top four, right, all have wins in that list.
Anakin, Tatar,
and then next,
Scoggins and Gannon,
are Luque and Rebecca Cox, Sarah Hokum, Emily Weatherman, Lisa Fagus, Helen Hanley, Valerie Mundahano. That is so tough to even pick, right? Because clearly, I'll go to Rebecca right off the bat. We've now seen Rebecca, if you want to use the word trending, she's trending in a positive way in the last few weeks especially. We've seen her throughout the years. We've seen her have ups and downs, but in the last couple of weekends, we saw her on the lead card for the U.S. women's. She ultimately fell back into 15th place or so. However, she was there and proving to the rest of the world, like, hey, I'm right here. I've adjusted a few things and I can be a contender. So she would have to come to mind depending on how things are going for her. Luque, we obviously know she has the skills to go get it done. She's yet to prove herself in terms of a win of that significance of this size just yet. But if she won the next event, no one would be like, wow, that's absolutely insane. No one would say that, or they shouldn't be saying that. Like you said, otherwise they're not paying any attention. Sarah Hokum, it's been a while since we've seen her.
And she won't be winning anytime soon because she's going in for surgery.
And just, we've seen her have these, I don't want to say flashes, but she's definitely been in conversations as of late, but not in a consistent dominant fashion that we, you know, she once was, or she was part of that conversation 4 or 5 years ago, more in that regular conversation. And I was going to say, you say surgery. And I was also going to follow up and say, I know she's going to even be in the booth doing some commentary here soon. So immediately, you know, she's not winning an event. She's not even, you know, going to be playing. And so that comes to mind. So I don't know if there's an obvious person that you say, could step up and win, because you feel like it could be anyone. Valerie Mundahano, obviously, right there.
Yeah, I think Katrina, I think you're Allen, Holland, Val,
Sayananda, Hannah, Kat, literally any one of those women could put three great rounds together and be victorious at the next event.
Yeah, I think Holland or Val are really probably, if you would have made me put money on the table, I would say one of those two would be my next pick. But none of them will shock me. I mean, I'm Kat Merch could easily come out and win an event again. Yeah. And
I mean, Jonesboro's the next event where she's defending a title. And obviously, has proven that
little
she can
home
win
state
there.
Advantage.
We've also seen that Katrina Allen and Paige Pierce have had some of the best rounds and some of the best tournaments in their life at Jonesboro, and they're going there this year. Haley King tied Kat Merch and lost in the first hole of the playoff last year at that event. So Haley King could take that down, you know, just as easily. I do think someone with a little bit longer arm does have an advantage at Jonesboro.
Yeah.
So that might rule out a few of the women when you're talking about that, but that's not ruling out a Heidi Laine. That's not ruling out an Evelina Salonen. That's not ruling out a Hannah Blumroos. It's not ruling out any of those women. Does Raven Klein now have the distance that they do? No. You know, it might rule her out to some degree or make things more challenging for her, but I don't know. It's it's a good thing we don't get paid to officially postulate on any of those or speculate on any of who the next winner is going to be, because I think that's a losing proposition.
Oh yeah, I don't think anyone actually gets paid for that. Well, maybe some people for prognosticating for me, making your winner's picks. So you can call our 1-900 number to get all of our winner's picks.
Oh yeah, those are guaranteed winners.
Guaranteed.
So. Congrats to our winners. Anthony Brella, clearly, as everyone has said, when his putter is on and he's firing on all cylinders, he clearly is a force to be reckoned with and is deadly because he has such incredible distance. Yeah. He has the righty-lefty combo. There's nothing new that I'm going to say that you haven't heard before in terms of Anthony Brella and his ceiling and the skills that he has. We've all said it. For a long time now, he just has to put it together for a weekend. And when he does that now on any given weekend, he is going to be a very serious contender / threat at every single event. And if you did say, oh, Anthony Brella, I've called that. He's been just ready for a breakout season. Cool.
Everybody has since he went to college, basically. Like everyone was saying, the minute that kid gets out of college, assuming disc golf is his career, he's going to have that potential. He's always had, arguably, other than maybe Eagle, the highest potential of any player in the field. And now we're seeing that potential actually come to the surface. So it is really exciting to see Anthony kind of just walk through some of these courses. And as you said, Jonesboro is not going to hurt him.
No,
I don't know if there's a short of maybe a medium sized wooded course where Anthony.
Yeah. Like an Idlewild
where his accuracy isn't quite maybe what some of the other, like your Isaac Robinson's is. I think that any course where he gets the chance to just open up a driver is going to be amazing.
So congrats to Anthony. You're all of your fanboys, including us, are happy for you. But quite frankly, I'm just not surprised at the same time, which is meant as a compliment. And if you think you're original by claiming that Anthony is good or going to be good or has a potential to be good, you're just really not.
Did I ever tell you a story about when I beat him at Memorial? I pulled him aside. I put him under my arm and I said, kid, someday you're going to be winning pro tour events. And the crazy part was the pro tour
didn't exist
then. No. But
you knew it.
I knew it. I was like, kid, ignore those national tour events. The pro tour is where the money's at.
Yep.
Yeah. I said, go get your education. It'll always be there for you.
And then I
faded off into the sunset.
You were the wise words, like a father figure. Very, very wise words.
Some PDGA news. The 2024 World's Invite List was published. The 2024 Amateur Masters Disc Golf World Championships registration is now open. The Disc Golf Pro Tour now has their own webpage with all of the scoring on it that we saw kind of debut this week. Last week?
I don't know. I was just going to say, what was
dgbt.com/event-scores, which I made a social media post. Get a better URL, DGPT. It should be something like scores.dgpt.com. UDisc Live was great because it was really easy to remember. dgpt.com/event-scoring is not easy to remember. Make it simple.
/event-scores.
Yeah, or event-scores. See, I can't even remember it. Event-scores. Just make it, just again, if you go through GoDaddy,
Go Daddy.
Which I wouldn't recommend personally.
Hey,
whatever.
Go Daddy.
I go through Hover, but hey, that's mine. Go to your DNS, create a CNAME, create a subdomain. Let's just point it to scores.dgpt.com. Let's make it super simple. That's all I'm saying.
Except for I already own scores.dgpd.
I don't think you can.
For a little while, I own badboysofdiscgolf.com.
Yeah, how did that work for you?
Just a picture of me. All right. So anyway.
I also owned discgolfstream.com, which now I think the Pro Tour technically owns. And I owned Fantasy DG for a long time, which I think Innova now owns.
Mm.
So my domains were cooler than yours, actually were in use, and I still don't have them. So. Yeah,
good job.
Yeah, way to go me. Yeah, those were that's kind of your big event this past weekend. We can maybe see if there's another. I don't know if there were other big events this weekend.
Oh, well, real quick, Luke Turnbull out of Australia tells us the PDGA elections process has kicked off too. So letting everyone know about that. And we can either touch on it or not. I was at Throwdown the Mountain 12 this weekend. And rather than, and probably some of you know the results, which is fine, but let's just for giggles, let's hold off on it.
Okay.
And I say that because tomorrow round one drops, and in case you care, which some of you do, I know some of you like us or me, or post-production coverage. I didn't want to compete with Disc Golf Pro Tour and Texas States, which seems like it was a really good choice this weekend because nobody, considering the fun and the madness and everything else that was going on over there in both FPO and MPO. So there was a very deliberate plan to give you guys fresh content during this week. So with that, tomorrow, well, Wednesday the 3rd, is when the first round of the coverage will drop. I got it edited every night. We got commentary done. Here's what I will give you as not even a spoiler, but just let you know, due to the timing of editing and then doing commentary, I was able to get Thomas Gilbert for the first two rounds. Third round, not possible, as I was traveling. So there's no additional commentary.
Now I already know who doesn't win.
Yeah, well, but do you?
I'm just kidding.
I'm sure somebody thinks they know, but you probably don't. So anyway, that's all happening, and first round drops tomorrow. So next week, we'll quickly recap the event and the things, just in case there's some people that are truly holding off on Throw Down the Mountain coverage. Next week, we'll quickly recap it.
All right, real quick, we'll talk about the other event that happened this past weekend, which was an A-tier. This is the Treasure Valley Cup presented by Innova, Infinite Disc, Strange Shop, and Drink, Rinse, Repeat. This is over in Boise, Idaho. Your winner is Robert Carlson, tied with Jason Lawson. But as we know, congratulations, Robert. You get the number one. You get the $600 more or $500 more. Well done. Third place, Daniel Pfaff. I'm going to say the P silent. Daniel Pfaff. Fourth place, Ryan Manning. And a tie for fifth place between Dallas Garber and Nick Larson. Over on the FPO side, Brittany Lehman-Snyder wins that by 7 strokes over Carolina Reaper Halstead. Congratulations to Brittany. And in third place, Andrea Kamak. Those are your top players over in that. And the only thing coming up this upcoming weekend, there's no Pro Tour event. We do have a major, though. It is the Collegiate National Championships. So if you're interested in some of the collegiate stuff, that starts April 3rd. That starts literally tomorrow.
Yep.
And it goes through the 6th. So I know you'll be seeing some posts. If you follow EMAC, you'll probably be seeing some posts about that, as I was for his Emporia State team. I know they're one of the heavy favorites up there because he pays the judges, by the way. He just pays the refs. Yeah. So FYI. That's this upcoming weekend. And then we do get a break from the Pro Tour. And you said, I think our next event is
Jonesboro next week.
Is Jonesboro
the weekend after.
On April 12th through the 14th.
Yeah, so for that event, I am almost certain it's myself and Valerie Jenkins in the booth for the FPO. And I think for MPO, it's myself, Nate, and Nate. It's the three-man team in the booth from Bend.
A Terry sandwich weekend with some Nates.
Yep. A little Nate, Terry, Nate action.
Mm.
So that'll be Jonesboro. I'm going to quickly go back just for a moment. One of the gentlemen that I missed seeing this weekend out there who has worked so tirelessly and so hard and was just an absolute pillar in all of Florida disc golf is Tim Willis. He had been helping for many, many years, taking pictures and spotting and things of that nature at the Throw Down the Mountain event for many years that I had been there. And if you're from Florida, it would be impossible to not know who Tim is. Dana was our starter during the weekend. Dana Smith was the starter, and he was letting everyone know that Tim wasn't doing so well and was recently had been hospitalized. A bunch of people had signed the cards and everything else for Tim. Unfortunately, it was within the last just 36 hours or so that Tim actually passed away. So reading from Sun King, as Mike Barnett had said, that as we were wrapping up the event, that the disc golf, Florida disc golf legend Tim Willis had passed away. He had volunteered as a spotter and was out there and was even there up until hospitalized before weekend three. So just like a week and a half ago. And just to quickly paraphrase, it said, in addition to being a diehard disc golf fan and being inducted into three different disc golf Hall of Fames, he played a massive role in helping Sun King get going many, many years ago, more than 20 years ago when he was first brought into Florida. And also if you're, you follow or can go out and read from Greg Hosfeld. Greg Hosfeld was childhood friends with Tim dating back many decades ago and had some incredible story and write up regarding Tim that Greg had put on his own wall today as well. So always sad. I believe he was just 66 years old. So rest in peace, Tim, and a huge hit to the Florida disc golf community, but certainly an incredible guy on so many levels, and always great to see him whenever I was down in Florida or in the surrounding area. Like I said, just an unbelievable guy. So sorry to hear that, but Florida disc golf is better because of Tim's contributions throughout all these years. So that, I wanted to get that in there, and I know Florida is certainly going to be missing him. So as we move on from that, we, like I said, coverage for that event will be coming out in the next few days. I want to thank Tom, who jumped on a little while ago and also gave us an insane super chat. We very much appreciate it, Tom. I know you talked about moving back to the area, and then I got to figure out exactly where that is. I'm going to hunt you down, and we're going to share some beers.
Back together. To this area?
Yeah, yeah. Tom had been doing some damn good work over in Michigan.
Yeah.
After moving away from Wisconsin, now coming back to Wisconsin, or has already moved back here, and we've got some catching up to do, my friend, and looking forward to that as well. A few other quick things. I'll read this because we'll break some out one more in the after show in a minute, but let me read one more thing by Statmando, who also tells us on 4-5, which is April 5th, 2014, when we had our first ever live broadcast, the Statmando official rankings of that date had these following MPO players in this order. So this is 2014 when Smashbox was just starting. In order of ranking, it went Paul McBeth, Ricky Wysocki, Will Schusterick, Nico LaCastro, David Felberg, Steve Brinster, Nate Doss, Johnny McRae, Cale LaViska, and Steve Rico. Those were your top 10 MPO players in the world when we started our broadcast in our live streaming career. On the FPO side, I'll read through them quickly as well. Paige Pierce on the top. Katrina Allen, who went on to win her first Worlds just a few months later. Valerie Jenkins, who at the time had three world championships. Sarah Holcomb, Sarah Cunningham, Des Redding, Jessica Weiss, Elaine King, Liz Lopez, and Ragna Big D. Those were your top 10 FPO players when our podcast began. Wow, it's just even saying so many of those names conjure up so many of the feels about our era and generation. Mm. These are the players that you and I even occasionally went out and competed against on we signed up for the same tournaments as them. Sometimes competing against is maybe a strong phrase.
Yeah, I wasn't competing against any of them,
but occasionally we're signing up at the same tournaments or playing in the same worlds as these players, Cale LaVisca was coming and playing in Wisconsin for some events and things of that nature. Those are your top 10 FPO and MPO players 10 years ago when our podcast was first kicking off. So if you're old enough to appreciate those names, we salute you as well. All right. Anything else we need to cover in the regular show?
I don't believe there is, Terry. I think we've covered the regular show episode 500 pretty well.
Okay. I think that works. I have a few more details and information for you. Big shout out to Stat Mando. Like I said, I came at them very late today when I was like, wow, what are some of the things that have happened in the last 10 years as a overall cumulative component with the events, and then also just even a flashback, the snapshot from 10 years ago. And it's I really appreciate them doing the work rather than me clicking around for hours to probably still get it wrong. Not that I haven't done that before. We got to thank Steve Dodge again for joining us. Every milestone in our live broadcasting career has involved Steve. Yeah. And so it's only so fitting that he's here for the 500th. Thank you to all of you that have joined in. To think that it's been 500 various nights of anywhere from 1 to 4 hours with you is a little bit absurd, and just in itself, just at like snapshot face value, it's insane to think that you guys have listened to that much of us.
And I know we've said it before, we couldn't do it without all the viewers and the listeners and the supporters on Patreon, and just this is something I've said before. This is something that Terry and I would probably be doing on the phone anyway, but you guys give us a reason to get together. You guys give us a reason to continue to do this over and over and over and have a lot of fun. I don't think either of our families would have thought that we'd be here 9+ years later, still doing this.
Maybe we'll look into a few of those other milestone episodes in the after show, but nonetheless, thank you. We're gonna shut down the regular show, then we'll come back with the after show. We'll answer some of your questions. We see a few things coming in off the board. We'll discuss that, and we'll see where it goes from there. But for Steve Dodge, along with Johnny V, I'm the Disc Golf Guy. That's Smashbox TV's podcast 500. We're going to take a quick break. We'll see you in the after show when you step inside the Smashbox.
Thank you to our $2 and above patrons. Your name is listed below in the credits. If you are interested in being listed as a producer in the Smashbox TV credits and supporting this and other fine podcasts, please visit patreon.com/SmashboxTV.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kayla Itzinas.
Kayla Itzinas. I'm Kayla Itzinas, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.